Welcome to the Sportscast, June 26, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Apple Podcasts. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. You can listen to us 24/7. Visit us on thesportscast.net. Also, follow us on Twitter at thesportscast1 and check out our app, the Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. The most important confederation tournament in the CONCACAF, the Gold Cup, has started this past weekend. USA with not a good start. Some people will say 1-1 against Jamaica. Mexico won last night 4-0 against Honduras. And join us all the way from the Northeast, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Good afternoon, Santi. Glad to be here.
Hal, you're sticking on. The Gold Cup is here. USA, they were about to lose. Jamaica had an early goal by DeMar Gray. By Damian Lowe. It was an assist by Damian Gray from Everton. It was 1-0. For a bit until the 58th minute. And the USA equalized by Brandon Vasquez, who just recently committed to the US. He could have played for Mexico, but he is allegiant to the US. Your thoughts over the match?
Well, I think it was later than that. I think it was the 86th minute.
88th. I just saw it. 88th.
Yeah. Yes. It was late. Well, I like Vasquez. My friend Tom, who follows U.S. Soccer Matters as closely as I, loves this guy's big. If you like big strikers, this is your man, square-shouldered, square-jawed, a handsome man, Brandon Vasquez. I think we can say that too. Plays for Cincinnati and has done very well in MLS. I think it's important that we recognize what's happening here in CONCACAF. The Gold Cup is supposed to be the most important confederation tournament, but clearly the Nations League event is getting better players. Countries are choosing to field better rosters, their best rosters for that competition. Or should I say, Mexico and the U.S. have traditionally not sent their best rosters to the Gold Cup. So that's where we are. I think Jamaica sent its top team. They see a chance to win or get to a final here. And that's why they had four Premier League players in their starting lineup. And, you know, they look pretty darn good. Miguel Antonio is, I think, the best striker in CONCACAF. Damari Gray is super talented. This fellow Lowe, who scored their goal off corner kick, looked great. Handled the ball well at his feet as well. That's a dangerous team. So I don't feel bad about the draw. This is a B team. This is an MLS team that the U.S. has fielded. There's nothing wrong with that. All of these guys are vying for opportunities with the national team come 2026, and they are putting out in a huge way. And there are a lot of guys who are really in play for, first team USMNT duty. You know, Zendejas, Vasquez. I love this guy, Señora. Alan Señora, the Argentinian heritage, and really looks like a player. So, you know, it's fine. And you know, I think we had the same discussion 2 years ago, and the U.S. ended up winning the Gold Cup with a B team. And you know what? That vetted a whole lot of guys going forward. They are way more confident, and the U.S. and their coach are more confident in them on account of it. The Mexican situation is different, and we can talk about that too. It's a little juicier.
Yes. they needed another second life, and they got it yesterday. But let's go back to the match. Sure. As the 13th minute, USA, you know, obviously was down 0-1, and assist by DeMar Gray to Lowe. But things nearly went bad to worse to the U.S. in the 27th minute when Aiden Morris booted an opposing player in the stomach in a failed attempt to clear the ball. The foul resulted in a penalty kick being awarded to Jamaica. But Matt Turner, the man who's playing for both tournaments, Nations League and Gold Cup, wore the captain's armband, and he denied Leon Leon Paley's to keep it a one-goal match. Great performance by Matt Turner.
He was great. Look, the U.S. did not play badly here. This is a good Jamaican side, like I pointed out. With it's their best side. And when they play, they're good. And they have attacking options that, frankly, the U.S. doesn't have. And I would argue the Mexicans don't have either. But, you know, it's the first game of a tournament. This is the first time that BJ Callahan, the U.S. coach, has really taken control of this side. And I think that does matter. And, you know, he knows these players, but he doesn't know them intimately. He barely knew the first team intimately until he, you know, coached the Nation League. And it's just, it's not a B team. It is an MLS team. And these guys are all trying like the Dickens to get the attention of the Federation because they want to play in the World Cup come 2026. Things will happen. Guys will progress. Someone like Sonora may go abroad. And boom, and Jordi Mihajlovic, another player who may get a gig abroad and get the attention of the first team coach, Mr. Berhalter. There's the save. Look, Turner is just a gem of a goal stopper. He's a shot stopper. He's long. He's athletic. He's got great anticipation. He's worked real hard on his skills so that he can play without his hands in that box. He still looks a little bit jumpy with the ball, and I think he'd probably cop to that. But he's not getting the games that we would like at Arsenal, so I'm glad he's getting the games this summer.
Which I think that's why he had to play these two tournaments, just to get some playing time. And so the equalizing goal, which came in the 80th minute, I was kind of like, I was late, I was tired. I was like, I don't know if they're going to do it. But they did. They actually had 68% of possession, so I imagine that they had a better chance to tie it than Jamaica going 2-0. So what happened was 60 minutes later, there was a ball that started with Jesus Ferreira, which you remember him from the World Cup. He lifted a cross to the back post where it was headed down, but not away. The ball fell to Brandon Vasquez, which you're right. He does look like a superstar, like superhero type of guy. A small pocket of space, and the FC Cincinnati strikers smash it home just 6 minutes after coming off the bench. And I think this guy is promising for the U.S. I think, you know, he needs to prove something maybe to be in that A squad.
Well, he's a very similar player to Pepe. He's a target guy, and he's good with his head, and he's a poacher. He gets in the box and finishes. This was a lucky goal, let's be honest. The ball came in, and the Jamaican defender, whose name escapes me right now, I'm looking at the roster.
Let me pull up the FOT mob here.
Yeah, it was the left back, I thought. But anyway, it was a service from the right side. And it was one of those deals where the ball came in and you could tell that this poor soul, the Jamaican left back, was expecting one of his guys to actually clear it or at least get contact with his head. When he did not get it, it sort of hit this fellow without knowing much about it. I mean, you know, when you're a defender, that is the worst feeling in the world. You are prepared for the cross. You have to set up to take that off your head or off your chest or do something with it. But when it doesn't get flicked, or it takes a flick that you're not expecting, but mostly it's a no flick situation because you're geared up for something else. You're just not prepared. And it just hit him. And it hit him and bounced right to Vasquez, and he pocketed it home. But, you know, Pepe and Vasquez are similar players, but I think Pepe has shown the ability to get in the channels and actually run at people, and that more than this guy, who I, you know, he may have that ability. I haven't watched Cincinnati enough to know, but he's very good on the turn. He's big and strong, and he gets to the ball in the box, and that's what poachers do.
Yeah. Vasquez came in the 82nd minute. Wow, just realized that a little bit late in the match. That was a huge change. This guy Tolkien, there was a lot of hype over him. Did you watch him play that much?
I did. I wasn't impressed. With Aiden Morris either. Forget the penalty. He looked a little tentative. You know, the middle of this, midfield, you know, Sonora, James Sands, you know, who plays for Rangers, number 8, and Aiden Morris, you know, these are the guys who are going to be carrying the ball. The U.S. system is now set up to accommodate strong on the ball central midfielders. The coach generally, is trying to stay with that alignment because that's, you know, the system that these guys would conceivably graduate to. But they weren't strong enough in possession to make it work. I thought Señora has, you know, real potential. Sands doesn't look as comfortable with the ball at his feet against decent opposition. He plays in Scotland, where he sees that only, you know, twice a year against Celtic. And this Aidan Morris fellow looked like he was a bit over his head, although he grew into the game a little bit. But he's a low-lying, back-lying defensive midfielder who needs to have the ball at his feet. But just look at this team. This is not a terrible team. Turner's in goal. Andre Yedlin, he's a World Cupper. Matt Miazga, another Cincinnati player who's been, you know, with the in and out of the national team a lot. I'm not sure he's ever going to be good enough to play, you know, to register as a top five or six center back in our system, but he's not terrible. Aaron Long, who everyone hates, even though he's a legitimate, you know, center back in MLS. Tolkien started the game. Vasquez came on for him. Then you have Señora, Sands, and Aidan Morris. These are prospects. These are young guys who were given the run of play. And then, of course, Ferreira was the center forward. Didn't do a whole lot this game. He seems to do very little most of the time. And then Zendejas, who got came off for Roldan after 65 minutes. I mean, Zendejas is plays for Club America and, you know, was a great coup for the Federation bringing him in. So this is not a terrible team. And I like the way it's been put together because I do think they have a chance to win the whole thing. What happens if they get Mexico in a semifinal or a final? Well, Mexico's committed to their first team. If we could beat them with our B team, oh my goodness gracious.
That says a lot.
They'll fire the next guy.
That says a lot. So we'll see what happens with that. This is just the first game, a tie, 1-1. Let's look at the other results, which I actually watched a little bit yesterday. Trinidad beat St. Kitts and 3-0. Yep. Haiti beat Qatar 2-1, which I was kind of surprised at that result. Yep. And Mexico beat Honduras 4-0. Do any of these results surprise you?
I guess the Haiti result surprised me a little bit. Qatar, I don't know that they brought their top team, but you know, their top team's not that great. They came 2 years ago to the Gold Cup, you'll recall. This is not the first time they've played in this. And I think we're going to see more of this. You know, Copa America is expanding and the U.S. is going to be trying to get into all the competitions it can because we're not qualifying for 2026. We qualify automatically as host. So, you know, we have to get into tournaments in the same way that Qatar got themselves into tournaments ahead of the World Cup. They didn't have to qualify either. But the Haiti showing was very good. I watched the Mexico game. I watched most of the game. They did outclass Honduras. And they are, I'm sure, eager to put the Nations League debacle and the coaching, another coaching dismissal behind them. Very difficult situation, though, for the Mexican Federation. They're really aimless at this point. They bring in a fellow that they like. He goes 6-0. 6-0, loses to the U.S., out. The guys who are in charge are like, I've seen weaknesses that we can't tolerate. I mean, just come out and say it. They can't lose to the U.S. And I got news for them. Their team's not very good. And their central midfield is just not that impressive. They don't have guys who are running at anybody with the ball. They have possession people. And, you know, in a sense, this is an MLS versus Liga MX tournament again. We have a U.S. team largely drawn from MLS, and we have a Mexican team largely drawn from Liga MX. So, you know, I'm very interested to see how this one shakes out. I'm going to have to sit through some U.S. versus St. Kitts and Nevis. I don't know how interesting that will be.
Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, which is going to be really rough for me to watch.
That's a little late, but I don't know.
I'm not a night person, by the way.
Well, if you like good soccer, I'm not sure that this game's going to be for you either. But I don't know. Anytime tournament soccer is being played in this country, I watch it. And I think there's a lot of fun things going on. And I can't wait to see how Mexico does against a decent team. And I got news for you. Jamaica is an excellent team. I should say they're a good, solid team. They will beat you.
They have a good front line.
They will beat you and they will score against you if you're not careful. I got more news for you. The Jamaicans, and I dare say the Panamanians, they see this as a tournament they can win. And they want to start dominating what is, you know, the remainders of the CONCACAF region, because the U.S., Canada, and Mexico all qualify automatically. And there's, I'm not sure how many spaces that are going to be allotted to CONCACAF, because it's going to be a 48 team tournament. So there'll be more than normal, more than the three plus a playoff. I'm not sure if it's two or three will come out of CONCACAF, but if they want to play in the World Cup in 2026, they have to qualify, and they're eager to get a feather in their caps and build some momentum toward qualifying in 2025.
Yeah, there'll be there will be an opportunity that, well, actually, there'll be six CONCACAF teams. So there'll be three spots available, which you said three. So possibly a Jamaica,
yeah,
or Honduras could qualify.
Look, this should make perfect sense to us. There's number one, there's tons of Jamaicans and folks of Caribbean descent living in England, living in London, Brixton, playing for English clubs. There's just a cultural tie there that is obvious. So if you're Damari Gray, you play for Everton, you're making great money. Your team stayed up by the skin of its teeth, but Damari Gray doesn't have a chance to play in a World Cup, not for England. He can't get on that team. I'm not sure what his situation and when he declared, but he's playing for Jamaica, as is Mikel Antonio. And this is their chance to go to a World Cup. And you don't think they want that badly? They want it badly. That's why they showed up for this tournament. That's why they're committing to Jamaica in this way. After a full, you know, premiership season, they're tired. I'm sure they'd love to have some time off. But no, they want to get their place set up. They want to make sure that Jamaica qualifies out of what is left of the CONCACAF region. And I think that dynamic is going to make this tournament more interesting than it might normally be.
Yeah. Precisely. One player that's not available for Jamaica is Raheem Sterling. So
no, Raheem Sterling is good enough to play for England.
But, yeah.
It's sort of fast with the Mexican situation, which is not solved. They haven't played a decent team yet. With the Canadian situation, I'm not sure what kind of team they're bringing. I mean, they committed to the Nations League in a way. I haven't seen Canada play.
We'll see tomorrow night.
Yeah, did they? What kind of team did they bring?
Not all the players. No. It's for sure a B-plus team.
Yeah, I would also keep an eye on.
But it was not their A team.
The Canadian Federation is in a bit of a spot. They have signed a marketing deal with an outfit that is promoting the Canadian Premier League. Have you noticed on Fox? They're always showing Canadian Premier League games.
I did not know that.
Yes. Now, this is part of an agreement that this outfit has signed, you know, with Fox, and you know, they're trying to promote their domestic league. I think that's fine, but apparently they're paying a minimum to this outfit, and it is basically bankrupting the Canadian Federation. They're having trouble, you know, paying their players. They've also committed to an equal pay policy where they pay the women the same as the men. And so they are just not bringing in enough money right now. And they said they might not even be able to field teams for the September international window, I read this morning.
Oh, no.
That's sort of weird.
They're imploding.
Huh?
They are imploding.
Well, I don't know that they're imploding, but they've got a cash crunch situation. And I'm not sure how you fix it in a country where the professional league is really MLS, and you don't control it. You don't have a seat at the table the way maybe the U.S. Federation has. And you've committed a bunch of dollars to this Canadian Premier League venture that is draining the coffers. I don't know. It's an interesting, I would keep an eye on it. It's a shame because, you know, this is the best Canadian team ever fielded. And they could really do some damage, you know, at the World Cup in 2026. But man, the Federation doesn't seem like they're in very good shape right now.
Yeah, there's definitely been a long going situation there since right before the 22 World Cup. So we'll see if they get things situated. Mm-hmm. And even though they are hosting the 2026 World Cup, so they got to get their stuff together. Let's look at the Mexican roster. What happened against Honduras was 4-0, which is quite surprising because Honduras is probably the toughest opponent in their group. Two goals by Romo in the first minute and the 23rd minute. It's funny because I was like, you know, was away from my TV and I saw, wow, Mexico just scored early. So yeah, they scored early. Pineda in the second half 52nd minute, and then Chavez 64th minute. It was a really domineering game by the Mexicans, and they needed that, Hal, because they've been through a rough patch this past week, so they needed this big win. Mexico had 54% ball possession, 46% Honduras, total shots 17 to Honduras 6. So the big difference there. And that stadium was packed, by the way. If you saw that Houston stadium, it was packed, and it was definitely a great Gold Cup match. But I think there's good prospects for Mexico. They play Haiti next, which they beat Qatar 2-1, and then they have Qatar afterwards. So this group could be shaping up as a Mexico sweep, maybe.
Yeah, you know, I just don't think Chavez and Sanchez are particularly gifted midfielders. They're fine in possession. They don't seem to want to run at people. They don't look dangerous at all from those positions. And this Martin fellow who's leading Liga MX in scoring, I just didn't see much. I've seen him play twice now, you know, in these two internationals, and just didn't look that great. You know, Hector Moreno is not with this team. Chucky Lozano is not with this team. I'm sure there are other Mexicans who are playing abroad that would be considered for a World Cup side that aren't playing in this team. I just don't think they're very impressive. I think we saw a fair assessment of their skills against the U.S. where they were dominated. So they are bringing their I think this is a strong team, and they've committed to the idea that this is going to right the ship, the Gold Cup. But I'd like to see them against a decent team. And I don't see one in their group. Honduras was probably the best test for them, and they destroyed them. So maybe they've turned it around. They got a new coach. Don't know anything about him. But I got some advice for him. Don't lose to the U.S.
Exactly, which that could be the final. If the U.S. wins their group and Mexico wins their groups, they'll be in the opposite of the bracket. So that increases their chances to meet up.
Well,
and who does not want a USA versus Mexico
match? We do. And let's be honest, the draw that the U.S. Just played is going to hurt them. They might be qualifying as the second team out of this group if they don't score a bunch of goals against Haiti and St. Kitts and TNT. Kitts. So we'll just have to watch it. We'll have to watch that. Do we care? It might put them in a bracket though that puts them in, you know, against Mexico in a semifinal as opposed to a final, because you know that the brackets or the groups have been set up to avoid that.
Exactly. And Mexico is one Gold Cup trophy ahead of the U.S. So if the U.S. wins this Gold Cup, they'll tie it up with Mexico.
Yeah, well, some people pay attention to that. I'm frankly more interested to see the Copa America, where that's going to be played in the U.S. That, you know, the U.S. is in the same position that Qatar was. They have to play competitive matches whenever and wherever possible in the next 3 years because we don't have a CONCACAF competition to prepare us as a team. So I think that's okay. I mean, it's not like CONCACAF is the greatest confederation out there. It's not that strenuous, or shouldn't be, when it comes to qualifying. It's not easy to go down and play in Honduras, for example, but that's very different from getting tournament competition against Argentina and Chile, you know, in a Copa America. I think that's going to be way more important, and I hope that we can get into some other confederation tournaments soon. We can't dog it. We need to set up a really testing set of friendlies between now and June 2026.
I would not mind competing in the Asian Confederation Cup. You know,
I don't see a reason. It's not easy to organize these things and to bring a top flight team with guys from Europe to Asia for 2 weeks, you know, to play a tournament. I'm not gonna say that's an easy win, but I agree with you. I think it should be considered. Any kind of tournament competition is worthwhile when you don't have any. But I mean, let's also be clear-eyed about the U.S. men's national team. This is the best men's national team we've ever had. Full stop. That's true.
Yeah.
It is deeper. It is more talented. It is more seasoned abroad than any previous USMNT. However, this summer is going to be hugely important to the studs on that team. Three quarters of them are going to be without a team. They're going to be scrambling to find roster spots between now and August 15. So I think they showed well in the Nations League, and now it's up to them and their agents to find a place for all these guys. Tim Weah apparently is going to Juventus. I saw that this morning. That's a nice move. We need 8 or 9 more of those moves.
I think I saw something. Oh, yeah. He's going to Juventus. Yeah. I saw that post an hour ago. That's massive. I've been hearing Yunus Musa might go to AC Milan and Pulisic to AC Milan. Not a bad spot.
You know, I was thinking, speaking of AC Milan, Sergiño Dest did not play at all for AC Milan during their run to, I guess, the Champions League semifinals. He got a few games, but not many games, no games that truly mattered to Milan. But I watched him play the semifinal in the Nations League against Mexico, and I said to myself, why can't this guy get a gig? He is a very dangerous player at right back, and he's taking his defensive responsibilities very seriously, and I thought played a great defensive game, but geez, what a weapon. How can this guy not get a club to play with? I mean, he can really play.
Yeah. We'll see what happens as how says we'll wait until August. Before that, we'll find out where these players will go with new teams. Let's go into the NBA draft because we're NBA guys. It was not a surprise. Victor Wembanyama went first. Number two, Brandon Miller went to the Hornets. Scoot Henderson went to the Trailblazers from the G League. Amen Thompson went to the Rockets. Alistair Thompson to the Pistons. Anthony Black to the Magic. Bilal Coulibaly to Indiana. Jarius Walker to the Wizards. And Hendricks to the Jazz. And Cason Wallace to the Mavericks. These are the top 10. Obviously, there was more picks than that. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts over the draft this year, Hal?
My thoughts on the draft are increasingly this. Set Wembanyama. Victor. Set Victor aside. In a year, who are we going to be talking about from this group that actually contributed to their NBA side?
Wembanyama.
There might be two or three out of 10 people that we've now spent 2 weeks drooling over and discussing in great detail. Amen and Oscar Thompson. Nice story. No idea who they are and whether they can play. And they're 19 years old. So are they going to be ready to contribute to an NBA team this year, next year, in 3 years? I don't know. So I think there's a disconnect for me between the utility of these players, the actual utility, and the amount of attention we pay to this made-for-television sort of spectacle every June. I can't get excited about it, Santi. The free agent hot stove is a different matter. These guys are proven. I mean, Draymond Green is going to maybe go to Sacramento. That's a very interesting thing to discuss, but I don't care about Brandon Miller. I don't even know if he's going to play for whoever drafts him.
That's true. Yeah, this draft is a little bit more interesting. I think number one pick was probably much the buzz of the draft a little bit. But you said Draymond Green. There was rumors yesterday of the Kings being interested. Now I also heard last night that the Warriors are preparing to offer Draymond a 3-year contract to Draymond. Do you think he should stay in Golden State, or hey, let's go to Sacramento? They're younger, and if I join this team could be contenders. Contenders.
I think the talk is basically a function of the fact that the Kings have a lot of money to spend, and they have a glaring need at power forward that Draymond Green would fill very, very nicely. But I don't see him playing another year. I don't see him playing anywhere else but Golden State now that he's, it seemingly sorted his difficulties with the front office. Bob Myers was part of the problem there. He left. I would be surprised if he leaves. I think they brought in Chris Paul because they're going to take one last run at a title. And I don't think they are in a position to win that title without Draymond. So that's my feeling. It's interesting to me how many teams are really how few power forwards there really are in the NBA and how many are, on the market in any offseason. It's really a lost position or a dwindling position because of the three-point shot. You know, you've got fours now who have to go outside and shoot. You know, the typical four, you know, for the first 40 years I followed the NBA was a big, powerful dude who had some post-up moves and never left the paint and, you know, watched the back of the center and protected the rim. These guys don't do that anymore, but there's still a need for that on good teams. Good teams find, you know, fours that make sense, although the Heat didn't have one. Look at Denver, though. They had two guys that were big enough to defend and get the paint and rebound next to Jokic. It's just not a position that is particularly well stocked in the NBA because of the evolution of the NBA game.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Chris Paul been hearing rumors that they could just offload him and tell him off. So he's not a guarantee that he'll stay with the Golden State Warriors.
I haven't heard that, but you might be right. I mean, I don't know why they would bother bringing him in there if they didn't plan to use him as a, you know, a second unit, third guard at 20 minutes a night. The problem with Chris Paul is that his influence, his personality is so domineering that it's hard to imagine him playing only 20 minutes a night. And it's hard to imagine how he will insinuate himself into a very strong existing team culture. And, you know, my book editor, Esteban, is a massive Warriors fan. And the first thing he made clear to me was that people in Golden State in the fan base do not like Chris Paul. Full stop. There's very little question about it. And the idea that he is now a Warrior is the cause of not insignificant soul searching by the Bay.
We'll see. A top all-star selection. He's been, I think, selected 11 times, but no NBA championship. He does increase his chances to win it with the Golden State Warriors, but we'll see how things go in San Francisco. Well, we're out of time. How we had a great show. The Gold Cup, we went for 25 minutes, which is pretty, like, historically a huge record. What is your prediction for U.S. versus Saint Kitts? What do you want to see?
I guess I want to see a good match, but I don't know that a good match really serves the U.S. tournament purposes now that they dropped or, tied their first game and didn't win it. They need to run up the goals if they want to finish first in the group. We'll see if this team is capable of that. They didn't create a whole lot against Jamaica, so I'm sure the U.S. will pull it out, but I bet it'll be modest. 2-0.
2-0. I'm looking for 4-0.
Good. So am I.
Level.
So, I'm happy to be wrong there.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago should be a good match, I think.
Yes.
We'll see how much their strengths are.
It's a Caribbean derby.
Correct. I was about to say that. Or like the Caribbean trophy or the cup, whatever. Because they're the two best teams in the Caribbean, I think.
Yes. Yes. I think that's fair to say.
You know, Trinidad, we have history with them. They beat us 1-0. It's back in 2018. Jamaica has beaten us before. Jamaica is not that easy for us.
But Jamaica has played in a World Cup. They've turned out a lot of good players. And, you know, a lot of them have been reared in England or at least professionalized there. They could play. I don't know who's coaching them. I don't recognize him. And maybe
he's a new guy. I've not seen him.
Nope. Before. And he's I think he's got them playing, you know, a different sort of way. But look, if they've got those attacking options, they can have a lot of people sitting back, you know, behind the ball and send those guys forward and let them, you know, create a couple of goals for them. You're going to win a lot of games and in a Gold Cup doing that. So I wouldn't look past Jamaica or, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, sugarcoat the fact that we couldn't beat them. But I do think they're better than most Jamaican teams. And I think we'll see just how good they are once the knockout rounds come. I think they're semifinalists for sure.
Yeah. The coach is Hamill Hallgrímsson. He's from Iceland.
No way.
Yeah, Iceland, and he's managed a team in Saudi Arabia, and he's coached the Iceland national team. So, it could have been that same team that challenged Argentina, the 18 World Cup.
No, that was a different fellow. He was a Swede, if I'm not mistaken. They brought this guy in, and he's not done well. He didn't do as spectacularly well as that other guy did. But Iceland has got, you know, a decent national program. It's an island like Jamaica is. I think he's going to fit right in.
Perfect. Exactly. So we'll see what he does with the Jamaican team against Trinidad, which is this Wednesday night, Wednesday before the USA versus kids. So it should be a good night of football. Hal Phillips, what is the best way to reach you online to ask you about the Grady Dick have a good outfit? I mean,
my Twitter handle is Mandarin Hal, and you can read my basketball stuff at halphillips.net. I have a new story up there about the Nuggets. I think we talked about it a little bit last week. And my new book, my book is coming up on its first anniversary, Generation Zero. It's really the story of America's coming of age as a first world soccer power. Thank you for that graphic. Pick it up at Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, wherever finer books are sold.
The OGs of U.S. soccer is in that book. Mm-hmm. Check it out. We've gone a long way in 30 to 40 years. And we're, like I said, I mean, Hal said, this is a deep squad. This is like our Man City moment. You know, we don't know if we'll have this forever, but just enjoy the moment.
Let me tell you something. I think we will have it forever because we have committed to, you know, the academy system with MLS, and we are sending guys direct to Europe, bypassing MLS. The breadth of the soccer product turned out here on the human capital is staggering. I mean, it's a big country, and that talent is finally getting trained up. And I would point out, with the Women's World Cup coming in later in July, I think we're going to see that dynamic on the women's side. I think that the U.S. women's team, definitely a favorite to win another World Cup, and I'm rooting for them. But the women's game is changing. More and more of the European, more and more European women are being trained up by the club system in Europe.
Easily. Yeah. Like Liverpool, women's team. Yeah. Chelsea.
Exactly. All these clubs did not exist 8 years ago, at least the women's version of those clubs. So I think it's important for us to realize that while the U.S. still relies on college soccer to turn out talent, and they've done a great job of that, there's no way in the long run that the U.S. collegiate system can compete with a European academy system in the long term. So I think that this particular World Cup is going to show us that. I think that the four or five teams that are being fielded by the European powers are all as good as the U.S. And that means a great, you know, quarterfinal round and beyond. But, you know, if the U.S. Makes a mistake, I think they'll lose.
Yeah, it could be the first time a women's team wins it a World Cup three times in a row. Mm-hmm. I don't think the men's side, I think a team has won it three times in a row. Brazil did it twice in a row. I mean, two in a row, but not three times. So it could be historic this summer for the U.S. women's national team.
It's definitely the last hurrah for this generation of players. They filtered in a lot of good young players, but you know, the name brands, they are at the end of the line, and they want to win badly. So nothing would surprise me. I think it's going to be very interesting watching.
Let's go, Trinity Rodman. One of my favorite players.
Trinity Rodman, great player. I mean, they've got some great attacking options, but they've also got this young kid who came in. She's like 18 years old. She may even be younger than that. The idea that she made this squad, I was like, wow, that's great. I'm like, wait a minute. Are they that thin? that a 16-year-old kid can come in and make the squad? I mean, I don't know. We're going to find out.
It's like back in the day when they had to have and then Donovan come in at 20 or 18 years old to play for the U.S. team.
Well,
also DeMarcus Beasley too.
Exactly. That was more a comment, you know, on the thin ranks of talent in 1999 than, you know, Landon Donovan and Beasley as all world players. They both turned out to be excellent players, but it's going to be very interesting to watch how this plays out. Right now, the NWSL, they don't have academies. They're barely scraping by. They can't afford to train players up like that. We know what European academies can do. We'll see what it makes at this tournament.
They just bring them. I know. They just, like, you know, put it up like nothing, like a huge pop-up store.
Well, right. I mean, when you've got money like Arsenal and Liverpool have, they've already got a system in place to train up young players. They just start inviting, you know, young women into the system. And, of course, it's going to work. That we've seen it work with other humans. It's just it's the best way to train up players with professional coaches at the club level, not with a U.S. not through college, you know, feeding a U.S., you know, women's national team program that, you know, is only together part of the year, you know, for tournaments. You know, club soccer is 724, 365. That's how you train players up.
That's right, Al. How, there's one more thing. There is a question of the day. Oh. What goes best with coconut? The options are chocolate coconut, coconut pie.
This is not a macaroon. Well, this is not a well-devised the answer. You got some serious, I need some actual choices for me. Coconut with chocolate.
Chocolate covered coconut. Yeah.
Is Mounds an option?
That is pretty much it.
Okay, yeah. I'm going with Mounds.
That sounds good. I might have one today, actually.
Yeah, I love a Mounds, so you don't have to ask me twice.
You can reach us at thesportscast.net or the Sportscast on Twitter and on Instagram, the Sportscast One. We'll be looking at the College World Series today, LSU versus Florida, that game three. And of course, Gold Cup tonight, this week, and of course, in baseball, a lot going on with records. I mean, Los Angeles, the Angels beat Colorado 25-1. That's a lot in baseball. So I've never seen it before.
Couldn't pay me enough to watch that.
Me too. I cannot. The only time I watch baseball, Hal, is the World Series. I'll
watch a game that matters, but these games don't matter.
Yeah.
So talk to me. Call me in August. Record. Call me in August when they begin to matter.
Well, there you have it. I love this part of the year. Some Gold Cup action. Hal, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi.
And this was your update.